We invite Peter Sasutaria, who will talk about a deep UV imaging study of the Cygnus supernova remnant.
Okay, anyway, my name is Viroda Sotaria. I'm from IIA Bangalore. Thank you very much to the organizers for this opportunity to talk over here. And I'm going to be talking about imaging studies of the Cygnus supernova remnant, of which you heard so much from the previous talks, using the ultraviolet imaging instrument on AstroSat. So a quick look at what AstroSat is. It's India's first multi-science satellite. The instruments most relevant to this talk consist of soft X-ray imaging telescope, which is really almost a sister telescope to, I think, ASCA, with about a special resolution of few arc minutes, and ultraviolet imaging telescope, which has imaging capabilities in narrow and broadband filters all the way from about 1,300 angstroms down to 2,700 angstroms. There's a quick reference over here to the effective areas. This is the effective area of the Galaxy FUV mission, which it was supposed to provide greater insight into of the observations of. And we've got our narrow band imaging filters out over here. We've got extremely narrow band filter NUV 280 approximately, which concentrates at the magnesium 2 line. And then we've got four broadband FUV filters, which cover all the way from 1,300 to 1,800. They cover the higher excitations of carbon, the ultraviolet excitations of helium-2, carbon-4, silicon-4, etc. And for our studies over here, the most relevant filters that we look at is really this narrow band filter, 273-288, which covers the magnesium-2 excitations and allows us to isolate from the deep galaxy images of this field. This is the galaxy image of this field. You saw it also in Professor Raymond's talk. I'll be going into further detail about this field here. So this filter allows us to take isolate out regions of magnesium-2 emission from that. Okay. Well, we've already gone through this material over and over again in the last two previous talks. So suffice it to say that supernova remnants are fascinating in their own way because of, they contribute significantly to the interstellar medium enhancement of it in terms of nucleosynthetic abundances, etc. They're the most favored sites as far as very high energy cosmic ray emissions are assumed to have originated. And UV studies are significantly important because we find that, you see hot X-ray emission, thermal X-ray emission from many supernova remnants. You see some of them also in optical, you see some of them in radio. And this is really bridges up the very high emission with the cool, low emission regions. So we are actually trying to map out different thermodynamic parameters as you go along the electromagnetic spectrum. We already know in detail how the various shocks interact, the forward shock and the reverse shock. We'll move on quickly to Cygnus because it's a short talk. Going on to Cygnus is really a middle-aged remnant, about 5,000 to 8,000 years. Yes, we know that there's a controversy over its distance, between 440 to 770 parsecs. Radius is about 13 parsecs, assuming a distance of 540 parsecs. The morphology, it's a fairly extended one. By the way, in comparison, our UVIT field of view is only 28 arc minutes, and therefore our observations even as of now are not complete. I'll be talking only about certain segments of the Cygnus field that we've got so far. So, here's the extent. It's nearly a complete shell with almost constant extinction along the line of sight over the entire supernova remnant's extent. So, you don't really have to worry about varying EV minus V over it. It's nearby enough, so you can actually see the great details of the filaments, sheets, the knots, and the regions of various shock interaction, shock refraction, diffraction, etc. Shock refraction taking place as the blast wave propagates through the overlying material. There's a question about where the overlying material came from. There's now fairly reasonable evidence to show that the remnant itself is expanding into a bubble, which would have been left over because of mass ejection from a large B01 or 089 spectral type of star. So you had a very massive 15 to solar mass star over there of this spectral type, already having a large amount of stellar wind, and most likely the blast wave and ejecta are running into the walls of the gravity created by the star. Okay. Rosette imaging, actually it's such an extended supernova remnant that it hasn't been looked over completely by Chandra or the higher resolution X-ray instruments. The most, the complete field, the almost entire complete field is obtained by looking at ROSAT, XMM and SUSAKU imaging. It shows a limb brightened northern segment dominated by soft thermal emission, almost no X-ray emission into the south segment, which actually raises again the question of whether the shock broke out into a low density region, or if you were to believe the radio studies, then there's a possibility that there were actually two stars which were not connected with each other, just visually along a line of sight. They underwent supernova at a different time, and therefore you have the Cygnus North, which is G74.3, and a Cygnus South, which is much younger. And the Cygnus North one is the one that's expanding out in the cavity created by this 15 to 20 solar mass chap, whereas this fellow is moving into an entirely different kind of a circumstellar medium. Okay. It's a question about whether it was a core collapse event or not. This is a review of the previous work that's been done on it. So like I said, the most complete and detailed X-ray image that you get with the modern instruments is really a mosaic consisting of XMM and SUSAKU patchwork observations out over here. There is a very hard source that has been seen somewhere out over here. And, you know, it suggests that in all possibility, if this is a pulsar wind nebula, then there might be something connected with Cygnus South. We still do not know whether Cygnus South and Cygnus North are completely the same supernova remnant or not. So we can't say for sure whether this thing was a type 1 or a core collapse event, a thermonuclear or a core collapse event. I'll move on. Well, this is a brief overview of the ROSAT, PSPC, and HRI. Suffice it to say that most of the work that I'll be talking about in this talk is focused on these regions. You can see that there's some amount of hard X-ray emission over here. Much of the X-ray emission that one sees from this comes from the limb brightened north, I believe this is the eastern wheel and this is the western wheel of the Cygnus loop. All right, quick look at the optical before we move on to the UV. You can see out over here, you know, we saw this beautiful Hubble image already, and it's simply a measure of scales. So you've got this huge, you know, about nearly, I would say this is nearly a 35 arc minute field of view, right? And this is seen in much greater detail out over here. It's the Whale Nebula. And yes, there's been expansion of the nebula that has been detected between 1997, 2005, 2015. There was a galaxy observation in 2005 as well. Our spatial resolution is not enough to confirm whether we are actually seeing expansion of the Cygnus loop or whether our effects are due to something else. Okay, and now here we go on to the UVIT observations that I'll be talking mainly about over here. So here is the galax loop, here's the galax field of the Cygnus loop. This is taken in the galax NUV broadband filter. We have multiple series of observations that are planned out over here. Our observations are still going on. We've got data from multiple of these observations, and I show some of the results from this segment out over here. For example, NGC 69601, this is in the F155 broadband filter. Multiple observations of this. I'll be talking in further detail about this, and especially about this, which is a three-time fork of NGC 69602, optically spectacular region, which, as we shall see, shows some pretty interesting effects. Okay, so here is the same field seen in SXT. This is our X-ray spectrum, the FUV and the NUVN2, and now on to more details about what we see. First, we should take a look at what kind of ion should we expect to see and whether there has been any historical spectral studies of this particular region. Now, it turns out that this the IUE, the International Ultraviolet Explorer Telescope, had a deep, had a program to carry out very deep spectroscopic studies of the Cygnus supernova remnant, and there are multiple spectra of this which are available in the archives, though unfortunately the IUV aperture being only a few arc seconds across, and I believe there were occasional problems with point near acquisition, etc., we really couldn't find one that sits right over here in the middle, and this is the closest IUV spectrum which we can find, which is already a little bit further away from the brightest X-ray and UV regions. I believe they do coincide, however, with some of the brighter optical regions of this. So here is the IUV spectrum that is available out over here. The dominant, this is the IUV short wavelength one. So really, the dominant dominant ions resulting in the FUV activity, ionic species that one watches out for, are carbon 4, silicon 4, helium 2, silicon 2, iron 2. And here is the, here now is side by side one of our set of observations. We have the N279 image of the combined, this is the IUV short wavelength and the long wavelength for the closest region that I showed to you, which was somewhere out over here. Like I said, there's really nothing to be, there's no IUV spectra available out over here. So this broadband imaging is all that we've got for it. So we've got over here an RGB image. This, I should say, corresponds to the FUV. This is the FUV broadest band 155. This is FUV 165, and this happens to be FUV 172. The three FUV band images all superposed on top of each other. You see that the regions which are brightest are where the signal dominates in all three filters, because as you may have seen from our effective areas, the FUV filter, the FUV broadest band filter overlaps with the FUV narrowest band filter too. And so, okay, let me carry on and show you the, you know, the NGC 6960, same region across different epochs. This is a flux calibrated, first we look at the NUV, so I'm looking at the flux calibrated image. This is superpose of red over blue, RB image. In the background, you've got the Galax image. Galax is a slightly poorer spatial resolution. We are at about 1 arc second, whereas they are at about 1.5 arc second or so. And superposed on that is the UVIT R band image. And so you could ask the question that since Galax has such a broad NUV band, how do you know that it is not just covering the magnesium 2 emission? It could be covering also emission by other ions, or there could be the thermal tail of the X-ray emission coming in as well. And you can see out over here that parts of the forward shock region are indeed dominated by magnesium 2 emission. So there's considerable amount of diffuse thermal emission, or possibly emission due to other ionic species as well, because like I said, we don't have a complete spectra for the rest of the regions. We just have, you know, bits of spectrum that there are a few IUV pointings in this region and then multiple IUV pointings in other places as well. Okay, so this is a flux calibrated region out over here. Most of the ionic emission from the magnesium 2 ionic species sits right out over here. We might be seeing slight expansion of the nebula in this image as well, but as of the moment, unless we take deeper observations, and we've got those planned as well, there the data is coming, it's not very clear to tease out the expansion of the times of these fork at the moment. Okay. Moving on to the east ring of the Cygnus, just a quick look at it before I return back to the 2NGC 6960. This is the east ring of Cygnus. Here is the image of the same of this region in three different far ultraviolet bands. I should add that regrettably we've lost the NUV channel since mid 2017. So most of our observations taken after that, we will have to rely only on Galax and on the whatever in far ultraviolet observations that we get from UVIT. So here is the F155 image. It's a very broadband image over here, covering all the way from 1,300 to 1,800 angstroms. Okay, there's UV excess, right? And this image happens to be the 169. So when we take the difference, we do see that there's considerable emission, most likely from silicon 4, dominating in the east wing of Cygnus. We've got over here F172M, very little emission is actually seen. These are all flux calibrated images. So there's actually relatively little emission to be seen in the reddest of the far ultraviolet filters. Most of it does indeed seem to be being dominated by emission from, I think it would be mainly silicon 4. Okay, sorry, this is not coming out very clearly. There's still some light here, but this is the same field seen in the, this is the same field that's being seen over here in the in the NUVN2 band, we were lucky enough that NUVN2, the NUV2800 angstrom filter and channel was still available when this observation was done. We do have an IUE spectrum of this region. That's one of the reasons why I picked it up to show for this talk. So you've got a 2800 emission over here, but there's also some amount of emission that's coming around from these regions. We don't exactly know what ionic species is contributing to them at the moment. We're still working on that. Okay. This is a superposed. I'm sorry, can we turn? It's not possible to turn this light off over here, but there are certain regions out here where we do see excess emission from this carbon 4 region. That's over there. I'm afraid this is not very clear over here, but yeah, there's dominant carbon 4 emission along the knots, but there is very little carbon 4 emission to be seen along the rest of the streams of these feathers. Returning back to NGC 6960, we've got here is the X-ray spectrum of this particular region, and this is a composite of the near ultraviolet, far ultraviolet, two particular bands, right? And okay, so RGB composite, okay. Yeah, so now we come over here to the question about where does the, what is the spatial correlation between the X-ray and the UV regions? The soft X-ray telescope has a correlation, has a resolution of about a few arc minutes, as like I said. So yeah, we don't have pretty good resolution, though we certainly can tease out different parts of Cygnus, that's for sure. This is a composite image consisting of far ultraviolet, near ultraviolet, and soft X-ray over here, and we find that a lot of the X-ray emitting gases are embedded within the tines of the fork-like region that 69602 seems to consist of. So it's not entirely unreasonable to assume that at least some of the soft ultraviolet and even hard ultraviolet is possibly from the X-ray tail of the X-ray thermal emission. Speaking of the X-ray thermal emission, it can be split up, at least for this particular region. We find that the best fit model that we get from the AstroSat SXT now is a two-component X-ray plasma model with variable abundances. Okay, so we find again that magnesium dominates in the low temperature component. We find two different components, and of course the abundances in the high temperature component are typically dominated by carbon and helium. Okay. Other results and conclusions, yeah, we compared the east wing, well, we compared the segment of the east wing that we've got with the segment of the west wing. While 6960, the western wheel, emits dominantly in the NUV, and the least far ultraviolet filter, there's little emission in the silicon 4 regions, and this thing is reversed in the eastern wheel, which is brighter in the F155 than in the F170. Is it a property of the molecular cloud to which a shock has run into? It could be an asymmetric explosion. We're not very sure. We're still actually asking the community to do some modeling of this kind of these observations. As people who have worked on IUE, some of you are in the audience know, the shock velocities typically are between 100 to 200 kilometers per second. And comparison from GALAX shows NUV continuum as well as line emission. We calculated out a preliminary attempt at least at line strengths in far ultraviolet as compared to the near ultraviolet, and we do find that yeah, there is dominant far ultraviolet emission. We have to still correlate it with the abundances using local models, but this is approximately what they would look like. So I think with this I would conclude my talk, and thank you very much.
Questions? Comments? Okay, no questions. Well, thanks again. Thank you. And we have now the coffee break and come back at 11:30.